Blog Talk Radio.
You're tuned in to Paranormal Horizons, only on 106.5 KITC FM and Blog Talk Radio. Join your hosts, Jason Ophir and Pat Rice, as we delve into the world of the paranormal, the world of ghosts, UFOs, demons, and even Bigfoot.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the world of paranormal. Another episode here on Blog Talk Radio and KITCFM.com. I'm Pat Rice.
And I'm Jason Ophir.
Jason, welcome. I'm so glad we're doing another episode this evening. We have a very interesting guest. I think all of our guests are interesting, but our guest is Martha Decker, and she's got an interesting background. We'll have her here live in a few minutes.
Yes. The time really travels. It just seems like yesterday we had another show.
Yes, last week we had Kelly Jo Monahan, and she did live psychic readings on the show. It was really interesting and lots of fun, and I think all of us got some good information from her. This evening, a new subject, as always, but it is in the paranormal. You know, as we say, we like to talk about UFOs and ghosts and aliens. I guess UFOs and aliens are the same thing, but Bigfoot, but all kinds of just interesting, unusual things that could fall into the paranormal is what we like to talk about. And Jason, I know you were talking earlier about you had some interesting news, as you always do. What's going on?
Well, this is going to be a blast from the past. This is an old story, circa 1964. It's a story I ran across that I found to be very interesting. So instead of finding a recent story, a relevant recent story, I thought I'd talk about this one because it's earth-shattering.
Oh.
It's a story that I hadn't seen before. This happened on September 4th, 1964. Three friends went camping in the Tahoe National Forest. Once the three friends made camp, they went for a hike, and what ended up happening was they got separated and lost. Eventually, night fell, and one of the men saw a light in the sky off in the distance. He was alone and lost, so he began to wave his arms in the air, thinking that it was a helicopter or some sort of airplane, and the object approached him. And as he was trying to signal it, it got closer and closer, and eventually it was hovering right above him. The craft is described as a cylindrical in shape and 150 feet long. After a short moment, the large craft opened up and a smaller ship flew out and landed on a nearby ridge. Now, this sounds like your typical UFO story, but it does get a little more interesting, I promise.
Okay.
After a short time, several short beings appeared near the man. They were wearing silver suits, and their eyes appeared to be like welding goggles. That's a new one to me. I hadn't heard that one before.
Mm-hmm.
Welding goggle eyes.
Okay.
And these beings appeared to move with robotic motion. And at one point, one of the beings then shot some sort of vapor at the man. So if you can imagine a mist, you know, like if you're I don't know if I can describe it, but some sort of vapor at the man. The man at that time, he was armed with a 60-pound bow and arrow. So the man shot the being in the chest with his bow, and when the arrow struck it, a bunch of sparks came out. So the thought that was that he was shooting robots, that these beings were some kind of robots. Mm-hmm. Well, these beings eventually ran off, only to return. Now, what's kind of amusing is during the course of the night, the man and these beings were basically waging war. These beings would shoot vapor at him, and they would throw objects back and forth, and this went on for many hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Eventually, yeah, it's bizarre. Eventually, the man was hit by this mysterious alien gas and was rendered unconscious. So what ended up happening was eventually he woke up the next day, and there was not much more to the story. But if you can imagine a lonely man out in the woods late at night having some sort of battle with three alien robots in 1955.
Did he reunite? Did he find his friends eventually?
He did. Yes, he did, and he eventually got out there and then told the story, and the story broke. But I find it a little frightening that there are aliens out there wearing silver suits with eyes that appear to be welding goggles. Interesting.
I know, but Jason, you know what was going on a lot in 1965, don't you?
Yeah, I imagine people were taking a lot of narcotics in 65.
Experimental drugs. So, you know, we don't – I'm not, you know, saying they were, but – just trying to make a 1960s joke, I guess. But that's interesting. I don't ever recall reading that, and I've never heard a description before of the aliens quite like that description, robotic-like with the welding goggles. I've heard the description of the way you described the ship before.
Were actual welders. Maybe a guild of human welders at some point invented a new craft, and they were just out on some welding mission. I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, thank you for sharing that, and I'm glad that he didn't die or get abducted, although if he got abducted, we would maybe never even know that, but...
Yeah, it's scary vapor. If aliens shoot any kind of vapor out at you, avoid it because it will make you unconscious.
Very bad. Yeah, no vapor. And I just want to kind of set the stage a little bit. Probably about in 25 minutes, we will take a short break, a commercial break. We have lots of great commercials that Paranormal Horizons produces for folks that we've interviewed before. And we always play one of the commercials about halfway through the show. And Jason, we still are offering that service, correct? That if Friends of Paranormal would like to have a commercial, do you still have spots open to do that?
Yes, I have one more that I'm working on this week, and then I'm free. So they are trickling in. I think people out there are seeing the advantage to allow us to do that. Because it's great publicity for them and whatever their project is, but it also gives us content to play on the show.
Right, you know, and the paranormal is a community, if you will, a global community is what I like to call it, and so we broadcast here on Blog Talk and then also KITC-FM, which is also 106.5 on the dial, but you can listen to that station anytime. KITCFM.com, and we play this show on 10 o'clock p.m. on Saturday nights. All right, Jason. Well, I just wanted to get a little background on Martha Decker. She has a very interesting background. She had worked in law enforcement for a long time, and we're going to hear more from her in a minute. But she was an assistant police chief, a negotiator, a detective, an instructor. But even before that, as a child, she had some unexplained occurrences that she experienced that led her interest to paranormal. Now, I'm not sure how all of that tied into her police work, but she's going to talk to us about that, and she's written a book called Paranormal Profiling. I'd like to go ahead and get Martha Decker on the line. Here she comes. Hi, Martha. How are you this evening?
Hi, Martha.
Hi, I'm great. How are y'all doing?
Good. So you are in Louisiana this evening, is that correct?
Well, I was supposed to be in Louisiana or Oklahoma. However, all the rooms were booked that I could have for free, so I'm actually at home.
But don't tell anybody. Well, you just said it on the radio. Well, Martha, thank you for taking time to be with us here on Paranormal Horizons, and so much to talk about. But let's, if we could start with your earlier life, when you had mentioned that you had some strange experiences that couldn't be explained. And do you mind sharing some of that with us and kind of telling us how you this led into your interest into the paranormal?
No, I don't mind at all. I just had probably the oddest thing that I haven't talked about in forever was an incident that happened when I still lived in Michigan, and we moved to Memphis when I was 4. And I remember talking to my mother, and we talked about this off and on through the years, but I was asking her about an incident that occurred that I remembered when I could barely hold my head up. I described the room, the bed, the clothing, everything, which was really odd. There was another incident that I remember when I was probably about 3. My sister was, she's almost 3, 3.5, 4 before we moved to Memphis, about hiding in her crib, or crib or playpen box to surprise her or something. And all of that was accurate, the place we lived at that time in Wayne, Michigan. I mean, I had everything. And then there's one dream that I had several times that was almost like real because it was, and I've always wondered about. And in that dream, I was a young child, and I was in Michigan, I believe. But I was like a little boy, but dressed up more in Victorian-style clothes, and it was wintertime. And there was like a mound of something by the street in our yard that I was like standing on and stomping on and messing it up. And some lady comes out and hollers at me to get off her flowers. And that didn't fit anything from back then in Michigan.
Right.
So I have no idea about that. But then the next time there was something that happened when I was about 5. And then something that happened another time in grade school. Then the ones I remember better were more when I was getting closer into high school, some of the incidents that I had.
So you just kind of had lots of, just from a young age, just things that were presented to you. It sounds like vivid visions and things like that you didn't quite understand.
Right. Right. Probably one of the most vivid was when I was about 16, 17, in my bedroom, and the window overlooked what were heavy woods. And the night I happened to be looking out the window was a full moon, and behind our house was more of a field, and maybe like a house or two over from us is where the woods started, and there was this clear path that came out of the woods and through the field, and I see these people, and it was the 60s, but I wasn't on drugs yet. No.
Now, wait a minute. You were in the policeman or woman, so go ahead.
Yes, but that was later.
Okay.
You were talking about the 60s earlier, so I had to throw that reference in. But I watched this group of angry people walking with purpose and very stern. They're going to go do something, and and lynching is what popped into my mind. And there, it's you know, it's dark, full moon, and they're carrying their torches that they used to use for light, and they're marching out of the woods. They're marching through this field, and the field would the path actually turned and came right into our backyard. By the time they were hitting our backyard, I was, you know, I had jumped in the bed, put my head under the covers, and
wow.
And I never, you know, I never saw that again. But I had several things happening back then.
Yeah.
That were really unusual. And I've had stuff off and on, you know, my whole life. And so back when I was, you know, junior high, well, even grade school, and probably, you know, you do those grade school slumber parties. The girls,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You do all those silly, you know, Bloody Mary.
Oh, Lord.
Try to do the, you know, two fingers to, you know, levitate somebody up and all of those games that you play.
I remember doing that when I was young, and I was pretty willing to do it when I was young. I don't think I'd do it as an adult. I don't know. Maybe I'm a little superstitious.
Or smarter.
Well,
the Bloody
one
Mary.
Or the other, yeah. Well, then there was a girl and ran around with high school, and things would start happening with both of us. And we didn't have anybody that we could talk to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we just... Things would happen to both of us. I don't know.
Now, Martha, was,
you know,
that in the 60s? No, I'm just kidding.
Yes, that was in the 60s. I graduated high school in 72. So.
Okay, right on. Right on. We're about right. I'm right there with you.
That's right.
Well, no, I know what you mean, though, about having unexplained things happen. I know, you know, Jason has had some experiences, and I have too.
Oh, yeah.
And I think those occurrences in our life, you know, lead us to where we are now. You know, Jason and I hosting a paranormal show, and then obviously somehow, you know, this tied into your work, you know, as you, you know, became an adult. So tell us kind of about that, like your book, Paranormal Profiling. What is that book about? And
that book is about interview skills, how to interview somebody, and it's geared towards your paranormal investigator. However, it's really full of ideas and techniques that, you know, anybody can use to interview anybody. I was a journalist for a very long time, so I threw in between my journalist and my law enforcement and my civilian investigation with the state. I've got like around 30 years of investigation, investigation interviewing experience. So it's a combination of all of that, but more towards your average person, maybe.
Okay.
Somebody that, you know, knew with this, and they, you know, because I kind of think a little different. I had so many years in law enforcement, I look at things a lot differently. I could take somebody, you can go into a house with someone who is just wants to help somebody, and they're sitting there, and people are coming and going from the house, and they're going, oh, that person has a lot of friends or a lot of family, a good support system. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, so pal. You know?
I want to say that, you know, I think that I'm going to have to get this book. And you and I, we kind of have similar backgrounds. I don't have quite as much time in, but I was spent 20 years doing the civilian investigation, you know, loss prevention and insurance fraud and stuff like that. So I know exactly what you're talking about with interview and interrogation. And when I was doing the paranormal, I'd always take those skills that I had applied, like you're saying, those interview skills when you're interviewing clients for a paranormal investigation or just investigating something paranormal. I just think it's awesome that you're out there providing this interview information with your book, Paranormal Profiling. That's super cool.
Well, you know, I've talked to a lot of people through the years because I started investigating in 99. And then when I retired from the police department in 07, I started, you know, my paranormal group. But I've talked to a lot of people through the years who are usually fairly new to this, don't really have a lot of interview experience, and, you know, they think in a totally different way than I do. And when they get a call from the client, they, a lot of times, they say that they, you know, they believe everything the client says, 100%, you know, is it's exactly as they say. So when they go in to do an interview, or sometimes they don't do an in-depth, they just go straight to investigation. They're going in to prove what the client said instead of going in there totally unbiased, doing a rather lengthy, detailed interview, again, unbiased there, and, you know, learn to look for different cues and in deception, because sometimes, you know, it may be mental, it may be drugs, it may be they want to be able to have, you know, contact a show or a TV show or something and say, you know, so-and-so group came and you know, we have ghosts, we have demons, we have whatever. There's so much in the paranormal industry now that, you know, you have to pay attention to everything if you really want to help somebody.
I was going to ask you about that, if you had gone to an investigation and through the use of your interview skills, if you had gone in there and had somebody that you knew clearly wasn't right or was lying or being deceptive. It's kind of interesting to me. I'm curious as to how many people out there are wanting to believe that their house is haunted when it's not, so they kind of create these grandiose events that haven't occurred.
There's, we've run into several. I've run into several. When they call, I get the phone call and screen everything before passing it on to the rest of my group or some of the group. And we also are affiliated with a few other people, so we also will take serious cases. But a good example is there was somebody who had talked to a number of groups in Texas. I already knew that he had talked to them, and I already knew what the whole story was when I was contacted. And he was he's mentally disturbed. He's schizophrenic and has some other mental problems. And he was calling groups trying to get them to come to the house for the demons. And my background put a lot of red flags up just because of how he was talking. He would say, he was in his 20s. He just got out of the hospital, kept going to the hospital, lived with his folks, said his folks wanted you to come in when the folks weren't there, preferred female to come in, preferably by herself.
Great.
And, we have a psychic on our team, too, and, of course, I know what I picked up just normally. With the background, but I had her touch base with him too, and we just felt like he could potentially be a threat to somebody. You know, one, you explained to him, no, we don't go onto anybody's property without the owner's permission. We're not going to sneak over there. We don't send one person. We always do interviews first, and we never go alone. And we always take two people. Occasionally, we've had three, but when we do the interview, that's for safety.
And, absolutely, yeah.
Because you're going onto somebody's turf and you have no idea if this person, you know, what their plans are. And this guy, we believe, could possibly be a danger. And, in fact, if he calls phone, my caller ID for him says, do not answer.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Now,
sounds like a creeper.
Martha, yeah, that sounds like a, yeah. Not a real investigation you'd want to go on, but I did want to mention, Martha, because I forgot to at the beginning. Now, you founded East Texas Paranormal, correct? That's your group?
Right.
Okay, so
right.
After you got out of law enforcement and you retired, then is that when you kind of got more into, probably because you had time, to do East Texas Paranormal, and then you wrote the book Paranormal Profiling?
Well, I started the group after I was already investigating, started taking it seriously, doing investigations back in 99, and I started that when I was off work for almost a year after Drunk had told my squad car. So that's when I really started doing some investigations. I couldn't do a lot that first year because I couldn't walk a lot. I had 7 breaks in one of my legs and 2 of them were compounds. But, you know, everybody, like most of them in the police department, they knew that I was interested. They knew I did investigations, but we kept it kind of quiet. And even though I left there and went to work for the state as a special investigator on the civil side with one of the state agencies, that was in Dallas. And actually, I left, retired from there and went straight to there, and it started a 120-mile-a-day commute for work for almost the next 7 years. But I worked for the state, and I had really good benefits, so I had a lot of vacation time and holidays off. So that helped us, you know, work with other people and fit things into schedules. A good part of our group is retired. Probably half of them are all either current or former law enforcement. So we have a pretty diverse group. We have a couple of UFO people who used to be with MUFON years ago that are in our group because we do everything.
Yeah.
But also,
it sounds like you've got a really good group.
Yeah, for sure.
It really is good. But as far as waiting to found the group, when you're working in East Texas and smaller counties, I knew everybody pretty much, like I knew all the police departments, police chiefs and so on in the county, and you know the defense attorneys and of course the prosecutors. Some things you don't want to give them fodder for if you're sitting up there for a capital murder case or something, for them to go after regarding your credibility. So you just kind of keep things a little quiet.
Right. But, too, Martha, kind of hearing you talk about your background and then starting this investigation group, East Texas Paranormal, it sounds like you have such a good perspective because you know, because you were in the police force, that maybe some people that call, maybe you've heard from them before for other situations. So it sounds like you can kind of really screen out people, you know, pretty well. I'm not denying that there's not paranormal, you know, real paranormal activity. But, I mean, Jason, you know, because you're an investigator yourself, that it's very important to do that preliminary. And you touched on it at the beginning, Martha, of, okay, wait a minute, what's going on? You know, what's really going on? We're not sending out one female to your home. You know, you really have to be careful when you're going on an investigation.
You do. I mean, you do. And actually, there was several years ago, there was one investigation that I went on with one member, and she was a former deputy, and we were in one small town, near us. And this was one that was suspicious to begin with, but she left for the weekend and left the key under the doormat in the apartment complex. This was a very small, older government housing apartment complex, and there was drug activity, gang activity, et cetera, out there. And the door is not very secure, so that's one. You know, here we're dragging all this equipment up into this apartment, and we're completely vulnerable up there. So that's probably one of the ones that we actually went in armed on that one for our protection.
Right.
This is because we didn't know if somebody's just going to come push that door and come in there and, you know, steal stuff. And they just see all this stuff going up there, and they don't know what's up there, and
So what happened on that investigation?
Well, nothing happened because there wasn't really anything going on. We didn't think there was, but we went there anyway because there was a child involved with this. When the lady called me on the phone, she sounded absolutely hysterical, and I thought maybe she had a mental problem. She sounded so crazy, and she was one that totally didn't look anything like what I had on the phone. When we went to do an interview, she's very articulate. She's in her early 30s, and it was like not the same person I was talking to, but as you talk to her and you try to, like, talk them down if they're upset, you try to, you know, ease your fears, you know, we'll be there in a couple of days, you know, you haven't had this happen or this happen, and as you, if anything like that I mentioned, all of a sudden, oh, I forgot to tell you, that happened. And so whatever I would tell her, and I started saying things just to see, it happened. And she watched all the paranormal shows. I found the ones that think they have so much paranormal or a lot of paranormal activity, well, I usually find they watch all the paranormal shows so that if there's anything that happens in the house,
right,
it, you know, they go straight to paranormal. And usually they go to... She had creatures crawling the walls. She had spoons dancing on the countertop. She had something tearing up her daughter's Bible and her Bible. And Tammy and I were able to look at the Bible when we were there for the interview. And, you know, you can clearly see the indentations in there from where they ripped, you know, where she, or, you know, pulled out and ripped the pages out of the Bible herself. You know, they just didn't tear off. Ultimately, what she wanted was to get out of her lease.
Oh.
Okay. It all makes sense now.
That's creative.
Yeah. And, you know, she called me about 2 years later, and she was over in another city in another set of government housing apartments, and she wanted me to come because they were having the same problem over there.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, listen, let's go ahead and take a quick break. Martha, we're going to have a commercial break. Everyone, stay tuned. We'll have about another half an hour with you on Paranormal Horizons Blog Talk Radio. Our very special guest this evening, Martha Decker with East Texas Paranormal. And you can also listen to us on KITCFM 106.5, KITCFM.com.
The Order of Exorcists.
There is a lot of good in this world, but with good, you must have the duality of evil. There are dark forces out there. You might not see them or be able to sense them, but they are there, waiting to prey on your weaknesses. If you have a desire to help others in need that are dealing with these dark forces, you can check out the Order of Exorcists under the jurisdiction of Sacred Order of St. Michael the Archangel. The Order of Exorcists is looking for exorcist investigators. You will be trained to make first contact with the clients, conduct interviews and demonic investigations. Once that is completed, you will turn in an assessment for further action. If this sounds interesting to you, you can contact orderofexorcists.weebly.com for more detailed information. I don't know about you,
right,
Pat, but I have no interest in investigating demonic activity.
I know. But just so everyone knows, that's a real commercial and a real request from Archbishop File, who heads up that exorcism group. And they get requests from all over the country, so they like to have a network of psychics and so forth that they can work with. And we will play that commercial again in the future. And just as a reminder, if you'd like to have a commercial here on Paranormal Horizons exclusively, I might add, please contact us on our Facebook page and we'll get with you to work with you on that. Martha Decker is with us this evening talking about how she got into the paranormal, if you will. She is the founder of East Texas Paranormal and has written a book, Paranormal Profiling. Martha, we just touched on the book a little bit earlier in the show, but I kind of want to make sure that our listeners understand that. So that's a book that if someone who is a paranormal investigator, they could kind of use that to, would you call it kind of an instructional book? And I apologize that I haven't got the book in my hand and had a chance to read it, but is that kind of how you would describe it?
That would be a good way to describe it, and I use some different, you know, cases we've had, you know, scattered in throughout it, for example, kind of like I've done tonight. But it takes you from the first phone call all the way through the interview. There's even a list, an in-depth list at the end of the book on questions to ask people. A lot of times they, you know, to me sometimes it sounds like a bookend at the jail, but parts of it, because you ask them about their, you know, mental, if they have any mental issues, or having medical issues, are they on drugs, have they been arrested, have they thought about suicide, you know, all kinds of questions like this, and even if they're, you know, on prescription drugs, what kind of prescription drugs, you know, how much do you drink, all sorts of, you know, and they're very personal, and so it's important to learn how to build a rapport with them. And I, you know, there's some ideas on there for rapport building, like, you know, not sitting there and texting and stuff while you're trying to do your interview with them, because they think that they're not that important, that's more important, and they're going to close down. You want them to open up to you, that you want them to feel confident with you. It's very important that you keep their information confidential. I know a lot of people have heard of, you know, somebody gets mad, you know, at somebody, a group gets mad at a client, different things like that, and all of a sudden they've let that client's private emails and all sorts of things, you know, go out to the public, and, you know, that's terrible. You know, this person gave you this trust in confidence. And there's always things about, you know, you can get sued, you know, there's groups that have been sued. You learn about the liability when you go in to do your investigations or your interviews. You know, it's up to the client what can or cannot be released. Now, there's some people that we've been to and helped that they don't care who knows, and some don't want anybody to know, and some don't mind if you share any EVPs or photos, just don't identify.
Right.
You know, the place, and that's strictly up to the client, and that's something that we, you know, we have forms that release forms that are signed that protect the client and protects us too, because
mm-hmm.
otherwise, you know, a client may come along down the road and see something and go, I didn't give you permission, and you have
yeah.
that piece of paper where they did.
Yeah.
I've always been really leery yeah. about that when I've done investigations. You, like you're saying, I mean, you have to protect yourself with some sort of documentation. There's nothing stopping somebody from saying that you stole some 5th century vase, you know, coming after you at a later date. It's really important.
But yes, that is too. And that's, you know, there are people that only do things by themselves. That's all fine and good, and that's their choice. But I think part of that is just from the law enforcement background. You always have that little thing in the back of your head about vicarious liability. And, you know, you don't want to go in. You know, I never went into somewhere with an open window, open door to do a building search alone. It wasn't just because there could be somebody in there. More than anything, it was because I needed somebody else with me, because that homeowner that comes home or that and goes, well, I had $10,000 cash sitting on my dresser, and now it's gone. And that happened to one of our officers, too. And, you know, in real life, I mean, that did happen to somebody that I know. And, no, there wasn't $10,000 there, but then there you go. You've got this, you know, investigation and all this stuff going on, where if there's, you know, two of you or more, you know, you have more, you know, backup, and you're going to have a little more bite to your, I didn't take it, I didn't break it. And, you know, there's things that you can get as groups, too, for liability, get some liability insurance, because what if you do go into somebody's house and you break a $20,000
mm-hmm.
vase, oh, that'd be a vase, or something,
yeah.
And they,
yeah.
you know, and
so when you go,
ahead.
Well, when you go into an investigation, Martha, do you have the homeowners sign something that says, you know, some kind of agreement that, okay, while we're in here, if we break something,
that home, that whole harmless type thing we do. But then again, that doesn't, you know, necessarily mean anything. It's, you know, especially in Texas, you can sign like liability releases all day long. You know, if I go in here and I break a leg or I fall out of that helicopter or whatever it might be, it's not a big deal to sign, because in Texas you cannot sign away that right. You can sign those all day. It's something that insurance companies, you know, want you to have, but it doesn't mean anything. You know, years ago when I was a journalist and a photographer, I was up in one of the big Army helicopters, and I'm strapped in, but I'm literally hanging out of the helicopter, you know, with my feet on the skidder or whatever, and I'm out. You know, taking pictures, photographs, and stuff. And if that strap broke, well, I'm just going to be a splat. But I had to sign, you know, sign one of those liabilities. But that doesn't mean that, you know, family couldn't sue or something.
Yeah, it seems like in today's age, it doesn't really matter what you have signed. Anybody can sue anybody for any reason. But I did want to ask you. Before we run out of time, we've got a while, but I wanted to make sure that I ask you if you could share with the listeners any investigation you've done that was, really haunted. Like, what's your most profound case you've been on that has been clearly something supernatural going on?
Well, there's been a couple. There's a hospital farther in northeast Texas that's been closed down since 2005. And you'd swear it's been closed down for much longer. And it's one that you run through and you hit areas where it just feels very heavy and very dark. And, you know, your hair stands up, you know, on the back of your neck. We've gotten quite a few EVPs. Every time we've gone there, we've gotten EVPs from this hospital in Pittsburgh, Texas. And... we've been there about four or five times, and there's always something there every time we go. There's another one that's out not too far from me. That's in a little town. It's in a family, a little small, you know, wood frame house, smaller house, and they contacted us because they were getting an EVP on their phone. They started things would come up missing. And just general activity like that. The husband would go to work at 2 or 3 in the morning or so when somebody would pick him up to take him to work. And a couple of times the person that would pull up in the drive to get him, the guy would come out and the driver's like, you know, who's that boy in your, you know, just looking out the kitchen window? Well, there was no boy looking out the kitchen window.
Creepy.
And,
wow.
Well, I know. We've been there. It's an older house near downtown, and that town's been around, I think, since late 1800s. Almost everybody in the family has had something go missing, and then usually it'll show up later, you know, in off-the-wall place. All we got when we were there were some EVPs, but they were very interesting EVPs. Some of the better ones that we've ever had. One of our members, Sam Epps, it seems like whenever Sam's around and he's, you know, manning the whatever he's using to record, he picks up some really good EVPs. We have one that sounds like total gibberish, like somebody's yelling into the mic. And we all happen to be in the same room, and you just hear this yabba-dabba-dabba kind of gibberish stuff. But I had somebody else go, and they went and played it in reverse, and they picked up a very specific sentence or two out of it, going in reverse, that was very clear. And I don't remember exactly what it said, you know, right now. So those are two that have been very interesting. The one with the small house, some people had started getting scratched a while back, and that's one that we will probably go back over to that one. Before, it didn't bother them too much, other than, you know, if something went missing, and as long as it came back, that was fine. You know, they didn't want it to go away forever. And so that's one that we may go back to again sometime. I got with them after I got the other EVPs, and so that they were aware of the EVPs being played and the other things that were being picked up off of them.
What's your stance on this scratching? We've talked to a lot of people in the past before, and, you know, they're always saying that if you have three scratches, it's demonic. Do you believe that? Do you believe that they're evil entities doing that, or possibly maybe they're just beings that are trying to get your attention? How do you feel on that?
You know, I have no idea. I have an open mind, you know. I mean, we don't even, you know, we have a specific idea of what we call a ghost. And we don't even really know what that is. What are we interacting with? We don't know if it's, you know, we don't know. And, you know, I don't know. And as far as the three scratches, you know, I know some people use scripture to, is what they fall back on for what the three scratches mean. You know, and I don't know if that necessarily means evil. You know, I know that if it's somebody who was very ornery and ugly and mean and hateful and maybe abusive and fighting and lying, possibly, you know, they're still around. And, you know, just because they're dead doesn't mean they become a nice guy.
That's for sure.
You know, and I remind people of that because a lot of times they think it's, you know, it's demonic. I've been around a couple of people and watched scratches form on their arm while I'm standing there. And, you know, one scratch. In fact, one, the oddest one, is it was about the size of a nickel or a quarter that just showed up red marks, like a burn mark or something on his arm. It just, you know, in a perfect circle, which I've never seen that before, but, you know, watched as it happened.
Yeah, like a perfect circle, like a burn. That's odd.
Yeah, that was a pretty, you know, that was a pretty active place we were at, and I was actually there for a conference, and that was in Seguin, Texas, at Moshon Mansion, and there was activity down in the basement, and that's where we watched that circle appear on somebody's arm. And I know the first night that we were there, several of us that were speakers were staying in the Moshon Mansion because it's a bed and breakfast. And Maria Santos, who's with our group, and she's a psychic medium, but Maria and I were up most of the night, and there were a couple other, R.J. Warren was there that night, and a couple other people. And we just, you know, all night long, we heard in the hall pacing up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down, you know. And, of course, Maria's finally opened the door trying to see if she could see what we're hearing. And everything, and there was stuff going on there. There was a former hotel or something next door. That's where I watched the scratch appear on somebody's arm. So.
And where was that again, Martha? Where was that location?
That was in Seguin, Texas.
Okay.
At the Moshon Mansion. Now, the Moshon Mansion was built by a former Texas governor who was an attorney, and they actually had a holding cell down in the basement. They had, when there's not that many basements in Texas, but they had a big basement. They had a holding cell. And they actually had a tunnel that ran from his house to the courthouse, and they would take all the Native Americans and maybe, you know, any Hispanics, any Black, anybody like that. They would take them through the tunnels because a lot of times they would get lynched. The hanging tree was between his house and the courthouse.
Oh, lovely.
And, yeah. So there's all kinds of pictures of stuff going on down there.
Yeah, I bet has a lot of activity.
We have a couple questions in chat, and the first one is inquiring if you had ever worked on any occult cases.
Well, yeah. Well, I worked on one that was was a hoodoo case, and we pretty much let that one go. It was the family practiced voodoo, and a young couple that I was that called me in was his mother was they were all brought up in voodoo, but his mother was real big on hoodoo, and he, you know, then he knew what it was, what had happened to them. So there wasn't really anything there for us to do. Other than he told me some really wild tales.
So voodoo is from Haiti, right?
Right.
Were they?
Right, and of course, Haiti, and yeah, and then the New Orleans, you have, you know, the voodoo in New Orleans, but it's very
a
practiced religion, and that's where they came from. His mother was a big follower of Marie Laveau, and, you know, he told tales of doing voodoo rituals when he was a child, and mother was expecting him and his sister to follow in her footsteps, and, you know, as they got older. And he talks about a time where a couple came to the mother, their child had died, and they wanted to bring the child back. And he tells me a story of the ceremony and not looking, but hearing the screams from the couple when they were killed. And he's like, I think they put them in, you know, in like Pontchartrain. He tells me about the child coming back to life and being raised by the family.
Oh my gosh.
But the child was more, was never the child that it had been before, you know, it died. And I mean, these tales are,
be like the Walking Dead. Yeah.
Exactly. But I got enough. But yet there's enough information that I got from them about a lot of stuff that went on. There's all sorts of stuff that I can actually go back and do some research and find out, was this couple, did a couple go missing about that time? And it was another one that also involved child abuse, and how when they left, the mother was going to end up, you know, with the sexual abuse of their 12-year-old daughter, and possibly getting, like, CPS involved because mom left and went back to New Orleans. They were over in Fort Worth for a while. But, yeah, that was probably the oddest one that I've ever done that I didn't do.
And then we have one more question in chat, and the listener wants to know if you had ever investigated in Katy, Texas.
No, I haven't. I know where Katy is, and I've been to Katy, but not as an investigation.
Patty says that it's very active for the paranormal.
For a specific location or something? Because I've been to Katy.
She didn't indicate a specific location,
okay.
Just said in general. I don't know anything about Katy, Texas.
Yeah.
Is that a small town or?
It's kind of a suburb of Houston. It's a little ways out from Houston, but it's in that general area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, interesting. Now, Martha, we're almost out of time, and I wanted to ask you, where can people get your book? How can they order your book?
They can go to Barnes & Noble. They can go to Amazon. They can just do a search and put, you know, a regular browser search and put paranormal profiling in, and that will bring up some other sites in addition. They can contact me if they would like a signed copy, and they could get a signed copy direct from me.
Okay. Should they contact you via Facebook?
Yes. Yes, I can do that.
Okay.
And
now,
I have a Facebook page. That's facebook.com/paranormalprofiling, and they can just go to that or find me, any other way on Facebook.
Okay, awesome. So just as a reminder, everyone, Martha Decker, her book, Paranormal Profiling, do a search in your browser. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Contact her directly on Facebook, and you can get a signed copy. Now, Martha, do you have plans to write any more books, or what's in the works for you?
I am working on one, and we're about through with the research and ready to put together. That's called Historical and Haunted Highway 80. Highway 80 goes across the U.S. from the East Coast to the West Coast, kind of like Route 44, and we're we're doing two books in Texas. We're working on East Texas, which is from Dallas all the way to Louisiana. Then the next one will be from Fort Worth to New Mexico. And then we'll do another one from through New Mexico to California. And then, of course, another one Louisiana all the way to the East Coast.
Oh, my goodness. So
the Texas one, we're still looking for, you know, history. We're looking for haunted stuff, mysteries, legends, you know, cryptos, UFOs, anything that's unusual or unexplained, and it's on Highway 80, and it can be anywhere because we have four books planned in the series. They can contact me on that. And we have
okay.
a separate email address for that.
Okay, we need to do a commercial for you.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So you're looking for occurrences or strange things that have happened related to Highway 80.
Yes, everything from murders to mysteries, the missing people, the ghosts, the UFOs,
okay.
you know, Bigfoot, whatever. Yeah, aliens, you name it.
Wow. That sounds really interesting. I don't know much about Highway 80, but it reminds me, you know, you always hear about, you know, Route 66.
Exactly.
And yeah, okay, that sounds great. Interesting. Now, Jason, was there any other questions for Martha in the chat room?
No other questions at this time.
Okay. All right. Well, Martha, thank you again for taking time out to be on Paranormal Horizons, blogtalkradio.com, KITCFM, KITCFM.com. Anything else you want to add, Martha, before we sign off?
If they have any questions, they can just contact me, find me on Facebook, and ask away.
All right. Look for Martha's book, Paranormal Profiling. If any of you out there are paranormal investigators, I think this book might come in handy. So check it out.
Absolutely.
All right, Martha. Have a great evening, and we will talk with you again soon.
Thanks, Martha.
Sounds great. Thanks.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Wow, Jason. That's such an interesting background with the law enforcement background, which does relate to your background also, and really taking in that perspective of kind of a different logical investigation approach, if you will, and then adding that into the paranormal. I think that is really right on, because you've done investigations, I really haven't, and you know, we know that, you know, not unfortunately, you know, not all the stories are true.
Yes, my personal opinion on it is there needs to be more people like Martha and myself that have a background in real world investigations, because there's so much paranormal nonsense out there. There's so much deception and lies, and it is really critical that, you know, as an investigator, you're able to communicate with people that are reporting the claims and be able to identify signs of deception, and it's just, they're important people skills, and I think there are a lot of groups out there that don't have those skills and put themselves in compromising situations because of
I
that.
I know, and all the paradrama too. So
no, don't even get me started on that.
I know. So, Jason, again, just to remind everyone, you can listen to this show on KITCFM at 10 o'clock p.m. Pacific time. And we're going to say good night, and good night to everyone out there, wherever you're listening, whatever day it is. We wish you good paranormal investigations. Stay tuned next week for another episode of Paranormal Horizons with myself, Pat Rice, and my wonderful co-host,
Jason Ophir. You have been listening to Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Pat Rice and Jason Ophir. Be sure to come listen to the show next Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on Blog Talk Radio. And also, check out our Facebook at Paranormal Horizons on Facebook.